Chapter 24. A Message Sent. The land changed as the sun began to sink. The hills grew lower, the thickets larger. Often the toppled stone fences of what had been fields had become mounds sprouting wild hedges, or ran through long stands of oak and leatherleaf and hickory, pine and paperbark and trees Egwene did not know. The few farmhouses had no roofs, and trees 10 or 15 paces high grew in them here, little woods enclosed inside the stone walls, complete with twittering birds and black-tailed squirrels. The occasional rivulet caused as much talk among the Aiel as the small forests did, and the grass. They had heard tales of the wetlands, read of them in books bought from merchants and peddlers like Hadnan Kader, but few had actually seen them since the hunt for Laemon. They adapted quickly, though. The grey-brown of the tents blended well with dead leaves under the trees and with the dying grass and weeds. The camp spread over miles, marked by thousands of small cook-fires in the golden dusk. Egwene was more than happy to crawl into her tent once the Guy Shine had it up. Inside, the lamps were lit, and a small fire burned in the fire pit. Unlacing her soft boots, she tugged them off and her woolen stockings as well, and sprawled on the bright-layered rugs, wriggling her toes. She wished she had a basin of water to soak her feet. She could not pretend to be as hardy as the Aiel, but she was growing soft, if a few hours of walking made her feet feel twice their size. Of course, water would be no problem here, or it should not be. She remembered that shrunken stream. But surely she could even have a proper bath again. Coinda, meek and silent in her white robes, brought her supper, some of that pale flat bread made from Zemai flour, and in a red-striped bowl, a thick stew that she ate mechanically, though she felt more tired than hungry. She recognized the dried peppers and beans, but did not ask what the dark meat was. Rabbit, she told herself firmly, and hoped that it was. The Aiel ate things that would put more curl in her hair than Elaine had. She was willing to bet that Rand could not even look at what he was eating. Men were always picky eaters. Once done with the stew, she stretched out near an ornately worked silver lamp that had a polished silver disc to reflect and increase its light. She had felt a little guilty once she realized that most of the Aiel had no light at night but their fires. Few had brought lamps or oil except the wise ones and the chiefs of clans and septs. But there was no point to sitting in the dim illumination of the fire pit when she could have proper light. That reminded her. The nights here would not be so drastic a contrast with the days as in the waste. The tent was already beginning to feel uncomfortably warm. She channeled briefly, flows of air to smother the fire, and dug into her saddlebags for the worn leather-bound book that she had borrowed from Avienda. It was a small, fat volume with crowded lines of small print, hard to read except in good light, but easily portable. The Flame, the Blade, and the Heart, it was called, a collection of tales about Birgitta and Gidel Kane, Ancelan and Barachel, Rogosh Eagle-Eye and Dunsinin, and a dozen more. Avienda claimed that she liked it for the adventures and battles, and maybe she did, but every last story told of the love of a man and a woman, too. Egwene was willing to admit that that was what she liked, the sometimes stormy, sometimes tender threads of undying love. To herself she would admit it anyway. It was hardly the sort of enjoyment a woman with any pretensions to sense at all could confess publicly. In truth, she did not feel like reading any more than she had felt like eating. All she really wanted to do was bathe and sleep, and she might be willing to forego bathing. But tonight she and Amis were to meet Nynaeve in Tel Iron Riod. It would not be night yet wherever Nynaeve was on her way to Gildon, and that meant remaining awake. Elaine had made the menagerie sound quite exciting at their last meeting, though Egwene hardly thought that Galad's presence was reason enough to go herring off like that. Nynaeve and Elaine had simply grown to like adventure, in her opinion. It was too bad about Suan. They needed a firm hand to settle them down. Odd that she should think of Nynaeve so. Nynaeve had always been the one with the firm hand. But since that episode in the Tower of Tel Iron Riod, Nynaeve had become less and less someone she had to struggle against. Guiltily, she realized as she turned a page that she was looking forward to seeing Nynaeve tonight. Not because Nynaeve was a friend, but because she wanted to see if the effects had lingered. If Nynaeve tugged at her braid, she would arch a cool eyebrow at her and, "Light, I hope it's held. If she lets out about that jaunt, Amice and Bear and Milane will take turns skinning me if they don't just tell me to go." Her eyes kept trying to drift shut as she read, fuzzily half-dreaming the stories in the book. She could be as strong as any of these women, as strong and brave as Dunsinin or Narain or Melisinde or even Brigitta, as strong as Avienda. Would Nynaeve have sense enough to hold her tongue in front of Amice tonight? She had a vague thought of taking Nynaeve by the scruff of the neck and shaking her. Silly. Nynaeve was years the older. Arch an eyebrow at her. Dunsinin, Brigitta, as hardy and strong as a maiden of the spear. Her head slipped down to the pages, and she tried to cradle the small book under her cheek as her breathing slowed and deepened. She gave a start at finding herself among the great red stone columns of the Heart of the Stone in the strange light of Tel Iron Riad, and another at realizing that she wore the Cadin Sur. Amice would not be pleased to see her in that, not amused at all. Hastily she changed it, and was surprised when her clothes flickered back and forth between the Algoda blouse and bulky wool skirt, and a fine gown of brocaded blue silk, before finally settling on the Aiel garb, complete with her ivory bracelet of flames and her gold and ivory necklace. That indecision had not happened to her in some time. For a moment she thought of stepping out of the world of dreams, but she suspected she was soundly asleep, back in her tent. Very likely she would only step into a dream of her own, and she did not yet always have awareness in her dreams. Without that she could not return to Tel Iron Riad. She was not about to leave Amice and Nynaeve alone together. Who knew what Nynaeve would say if Amice got her temper up? When the Wise One arrived, she would simply say that she had just arrived herself. The Wise Ones had always been a bit ahead of her, or arrived at the same time before this, but surely if Amice believed she had only been there a second, it would not matter. She had almost grown accustomed to the feel of unseen eyes in this vast chamber. Only the columns and the shadows, and all this empty space. Still, she hoped that Amice was not too long in coming, nor Nynaeve. But they would be. Time could be as strange in Tel Iron Riad as in any dream, but it had to be a good hour yet before the arranged meeting. Perhaps she had time to... Suddenly she realized that she could hear voices, like faint whispers among the columns. Embracing Saidar, she moved cautiously toward the sound, toward the place where Rand had left Kalandor beneath the Great Dome. The Wise Ones claimed that control of Tel Iron Riad was as strong as the One Power here, but she knew her abilities with the power far better, and trusted them more. Still hidden well back among the thick redstone columns, she stopped and stared. It was not a pair of black sisters, as she had feared, and not Nynaeve either. Instead, Elaine stood near the glittering shaft of Kalandor rising out of the floorstone, deep in quiet conversation with as oddly dressed a woman as Egwene had ever seen. She wore a short white coat of peculiar cut, and wide yellow trousers gathered in folds at her ankles, above short boots with raised heels. An intricate braid of golden hair hung down her back, and she held a bow that gleamed like polished silver. The arrows in the quiver shone, too. Egwene squeezed her eyes shut. First the difficulty with her dress, and now this. Just because she had been reading about Brigitta, a silver bow told the name for certain, was no reason to imagine that she saw her. Brigitta waited, somewhere, for the Horn of Valir to call her and the other heroes to the last battle. But when Egwene opened her eyes again, Elaine and the oddly dressed woman were still there. She could not quite make out what they were saying, but she believed her eyes this time. She was on the point of going out to announce herself when a voice spoke behind her. "Did you decide to come early? Alone?" Egwene whirled to face Amice, her sun-darkened face too youthful for her white hair, and leathery-cheeked Bear. Both stood with their arms folded beneath their breasts, Even the way their shawls were pulled tight spoke of displeasure. "I fell asleep," Egwene said. It was too much before time for her story to work. Even as she explained hastily about dozing off and why she had not gone back, minus the part about not wanting Nynaeve and Amys to talk alone, she was surprised to feel a tinge of shame that she had intended to lie, and relief that she had not. Not that the truth would necessarily save her. Amys was not as strict as Bear, not quite, but she was perfectly capable of setting her to piling up rocks the rest of the night. Many of the wise ones were great believers in useless labor for punishment. You could not tell yourself you were doing anything other than being punished while you were burying ashes with a spoon. That was provided they did not simply refuse to teach her any more, of course. The ashes would be much preferable. She could not hold back a sigh of relief when Amys nodded and said, "It can happen. But next time return and dream your own dreams. I could have heard what Nynaeve has to say and tell her what we know. If Milane was not with Bael and Dorinda tonight, she would be here as well. You frightened Bear. She is proud of your progress, and if anything happened to you..." Bear did not look proud. If anything, she scowled even more deeply as Amys paused. "You are lucky Coinda found you when she returned to clear away your supper, and was worried when she could not rouse you to move to your blankets. If I thought you had been here more than a few minutes alone..." The glare sharpened in dire promise for a moment, and then her voice turned grumpy. "Now I suppose we have to wait for Nynaeve to arrive, just to stop you begging if we send you back. If we must, we must, but we will use the time to advantage. Concentrate your mind on..."
"It isn't Nynaeve," Egwene said hastily.
She did not want to know what a lesson would be like with Bear in this mood. "It is Elaine, and..." She trailed off as she turned. Elaine, in elegant green silk suitable for a ball, was pacing up and down not far from Kalandor. Birgitta was nowhere to be seen. "I did not imagine her." "She is here already," Amys said, moving to where she could see too. "Another young fool," Bear muttered. "Girls today have no more brains or discipline than goats." She stalked out ahead of Egwene and Amys and planted herself across Kalandor's glittering shape from Elaine, fists on hips. "You are not my pupil, Elaine of Andor, though you've wheedled enough out of us to keep you from killing yourself here if you are careful. But if you were, I would welt you from the toes up and send you back to your mother until you were grown enough to be let out of her sight, which I think might take as many more years as you have lived already. I know you have been coming into the world of dreams alone, you and Nynaeve. You are both fools to do it." Elaine gave a start when they first appeared, but as Bear's tirade washed over her, she drew herself up, that chilly tilt to her chin. Her gown became red and took on a finer sheen, and grew embroidery down the sleeves and across the high bodice, including rearing lions in white and gold lilies, her own sigil. A thin golden diadem rested in her red-gold curls, a single rearing lion set in moondrops above her brows. She did not yet have the best control over such things. Then again, maybe she wore exactly what she intended this time. "I do thank you for your concern," she said regally. "Yet it is true that I am not your pupil, Bear of the Haido Sharad. I am grateful for your instruction, but I must go my own way on the tasks given me by the Ammerlin seat."
"A dead woman," Bear said coldly. "You claim obedience to a dead woman."
Egwene could all but feel Bear's hackles standing erect in anger. If she did not do something, Bear might decide to teach Elaine a painful lesson. The last thing they needed was that sort of squabble.
"What? Why are you here instead of Nynaeve?"
She had been going to ask what Elaine was doing there, but that would have given Bear an opening, and maybe sounded as if she were on the Wise One's side. What she wanted to ask was what Elaine had been doing talking to Birgitta.
"I did not imagine it."
Maybe it had been someone dreaming she was Birgitta.
But only those who entered Telairan Riad knowingly remained for more than minutes, and Elaine surely would not have been speaking with one of them. Where did Birgitta and the others wait?
Nynaeve is nursing a sore head. The diadem vanished, and Elaine's gown became simpler with only a few golden scrolls around the bodice.
Is she ill? Egwene asked anxiously.
Only with a headache and a bruise or two.
Elaine giggled and winced at the same time.
Oh, Egwene, you would not have believed it. All four of the Chavanas had come to have supper with us.
To flirt with Nynaeve, really. They tried flirting with me the first few days, but Tom had a talk with them and they stopped. He did not have any right to do that. Not that I wanted them to flirt, you understand. Anyway, there they were, flirting with Nynaeve, or trying to because she paid them no more mind than buzzing flies, when Latel stalked up and began hitting Nynaeve with a stick, calling her all sorts of terrible names.
Was she hurt?
Egwene was not sure which of them she meant. If Nynaeve's temper was roused.
Not her.
The Chavanas tried to pull her off Latel, and Tarek will likely limp for days, not to mention Brug's swollen lip. Petra had to carry Latel to her wagon, and I doubt she'll put her nose out for some time.
Elaine shook her head.
Luca did not know who to blame. One of his acrobats lamed and his bear trainer weeping on her bed, so he blamed everybody, and I thought Nynaeve was going to box his ears as well. At least she did not channel. I thought she was going to once or twice, until she had Latel down on the ground.
Amice and Bear exchanged unreadable glances. This certainly was not how they expected Aes Sedai to behave.
Egwene felt a little confused herself, but it was mainly over keeping up with all these people she had only heard of briefly before. Odd people, traveling with lions, dogs, and bears, and an illuminator. She did not believe this Petra could possibly be as strong as Elaine claimed, but then Tom was eating fire as well as juggling, and what Elaine and Julin were doing sounded as strange, even if she was using the power. If Nynaeve had come close to channeling, Elaine must have seen the glow of her embracing Sayidar. Whether they had real reason to be hiding or not, they would not remain hidden long if one of them channeled and let people see it. The tower's eyes and ears would certainly hear. That sort of news traveled quickly, especially if they were not out of Amadicia yet.
You tell Nynaeve from me that she had best hold her temper, or I'll have some words to say to her that she will not like.
Elaine looked startled. Nynaeve had certainly not told her what had passed between them. And Egwene added,
if she channels, you can be sure Elida will hear of it as soon as a pigeon can fly to Tar Valon.
She could not say more. As it was, it brought another exchange of glances between Amice and Bear. What they really thought of a tower divided, and an Amarlin who, as far as they knew, had given orders for Aes Sedai to be drugged, they had never let on. They could make Moiraine look like the village gossip when they wished.
In fact, I wish I had both of you alone. If we were in the tower in our old rooms, I'd say a few words to the pair of you.
Elaine stiffened, as queenly and cool as she had been with Bear.
You may say them to me whenever you wish.
Had she understood?
Alone, away from the wise ones, in the tower,
Egwene could only hope. Best to change the subject and hope the wise ones were not picking over her words as carefully as she hoped that Elaine was.
Will this fight with Latel cause problems?
What had Nynaeve been thinking of? Back home she would have had any woman her age who did the same up before the women's circle so fast that her eyes would pop.
You must be almost to Gildan by now.
3 more days, Luca says, if we are lucky. The menagerie does not move very fast.
Perhaps you should leave them now.
Perhaps, Elaine said slowly.
I really would like to high-walk just once in front of—
With a shake of her head, she glanced at Kalandor. The neckline of her gown dipped precipitously, then rose again.
I do not know, Egwene. We could not travel much faster alone than we are traveling, and we don't know where to go exactly yet.
That meant Nynaeve had not remembered where the Blues were gathering, if Elida's report had been right. not to mention that Nynaeve might burst if we had to abandon the wagon and buy saddle horses or another coach. Besides, we are both learning a great deal about the Seanchan. Sarandon served as a Sredit handler at the court of the Nine Moons, where the Seanchan Empress sits. Yesterday she showed us things that she took when she fled Falma. Egwene, she has an Eidam. Egwene stepped forward, her skirts brushing Kalandor. Rand's traps were not physical, whatever Nynaeve seemed to think.
Can you be sure she was not a Suldam?
Her voice trembled with anger.
I am certain, Elaine said soothingly. I put the Eidam on her myself, and it had no effect.
That was a little secret that the Seanchan themselves did not know, or hid well if they did. Their Damani were women born with the spark, women who would channel eventually even if untaught. But the Suldam, who controlled the Damani, they were the women who needed to be taught. The Seanchan thought that women who could channel were dangerous animals who had to be controlled, and yet unknowingly gave many of them honored positions.
I do not understand this interest in the Seanchan.
Amis said the name awkwardly. She had never heard it until Elaine spoke it at their last meeting.
What they do is terrible, but they are gone. Randall Thor defeated them, and they fled.
Egwene turned her back and stared at the huge polished columns running off into shadow.
Gone is not to say they will never come back.
She did not want them to see her face, not even Elaine.
We must know whatever we can learn in case they ever return.
They had put an Eidam on her in Falma. They had meant to send her over the Arith Ocean to Seanchan to spend the rest of her life as a dog on a leash. Fury welled up in her every time she thought of them, and fear, too. The fear that if they did return, they would succeed in taking and holding her this time. That was what she could not allow them to see, the stark terror that she knew was in her eyes.
Elaine put a hand on her arm.
We will be ready for them if they do come back, she said gently. They will not find us in surprise and ignorance again.
Egwene patted her hand, though she wanted to clutch it. Elaine understood more than Egwene wished, yet it was comforting that she did.
Let us finish what we are here for, Bear said briskly. You need to be asleep in truth, Egwene.
We had the guy Shine undress you and put you in your blankets.
Surprisingly, Amis sounded as gentle as Elaine. When you return to your body, you can sleep until morning.
Egwene's cheeks colored. Given Aiel ways, it was as likely as not that some of those guy Shine had been men. She would have to speak to them about that. Delicately, of course. They would not understand, and it was not a thing she could be comfortable explaining.
The fear was gone, she realized.
Apparently I'm more afraid of being embarrassed than I am of the Seanchan. It was not true, but she held to the thought.
There was really little to tell Elaine. That they were in Cairhien, finally, that Culloden had devastated Salian and ravaged the surrounding land, that the Shido were still days ahead and moving west. The Wise Ones knew more than she. They had not taken to their tents straight away. There had been skirmishes in the evening, small ones and only a few, with mounted men who quickly fled, and other men on horses who had been sighted ran without fighting. There had been no prisoners taken. Warain and Lan seemed to think that the riders could have been bandits, or supporters of one or another of the houses trying to claim the Sun Throne. All had been equally ragged. Whoever they were, word would soon spread that there were more Aiel in Cairhien.
They had to learn sooner or later, was Elaine's only comment.
Egwene watched Elaine as she and the Wise Ones faded away. To her it seemed as though Elaine and the Heart of the Stone became more and more attenuated, but her golden-haired friend gave no sign as to whether she had understood the message.